We're not getting out of here alive, but neither is that zombie takeout.
What's up? Welcome to episode 190 of Zombie Takeout.
Zombie Takeout.
The B-Moving Cult Movie Podcast. I'm Uncle John.
And I'm Scotto.
And we're back after, what, a month off now?
Something like that.
Yeah. And before we get to this week's movie, a little bit of listener submitted about one of this week's movies. On the trailer for the first of them, Matt Gorenson said, "I hope you guys go into some of the fan theories about the ending." And we will definitely be getting into that. I have some very strong opinions.
Oh, thank God, because, you know what, at first, I saw this before watching the movies, and of course, I've seen the 1982 version, and I remember it being pretty a straightforward movie, thinking, and my thought was, what the fuck is he talking about? What could you possibly make out of this? And in fact, I was kind of
thinking... Forgot about the ending.
I was kind of thinking before going into it, like, why would they even bother doing a prequel remake kind of thing either? And then when I saw it, I understood it all.
Yeah. And of course, those movies are from 1982, The Thing, and from 2011, The Thing.
Could be the worst titled movies ever made.
Mm-hmm. And of course, that brings us to the impromptu plot summary, sponsored by flamethrowers. They only ever burn the intended target, never any wood that happens to be around it, except for bookshelves. Those will go up immediately and burn out just as quickly. It's physics.
And also brought to you by Winter Vacations. Fuck you. Oh, seriously, would it have killed us to have done a deserted island movie this time of year?
Mm-hmm.
I live in Chicago, man.
Yeah. I know. This movie looks like it could have been set outside of your house.
Well, because of what happened last Monday, and yeah, I'll buy in. I'll call it a polar vortex as well.
Love that.
If you've been through it, it fucking fits it, man.
Oh, I understand that. I know that, well, it's been fairly warm around here lately, but I understand that on the coasts, we have no clue.
Like, it's not a hurricane, because everything was just so dead, you know? It wasn't like the crazy, it was just cold. And the only reason why I bring this up is because we're doing a movie where they were supposed to be out in 40 below weather.
It's set in Antarctica.
Right. They mentioned that it's 40 below zero. And so I think it was like, wow, there is way too much exposed skin there for it to be 40 below zero.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's almost hard to tell which one I'm talking about, isn't it?
A little bit, yeah.
The plots are, they're repetitive.
Quite.
But you can understand why. In fact, the original sets it up to be repetitive. The original has everything in it. Anyway, we'll start with the 1982 version. We have a U.S. base in Antarctica.
McMurdo, I believe.
Oh, is that...
There was reference to McMurdo. I think they said it McMurdo. Anyway.
And they're about ready to hunker down for the winter. And this crazy thing happens. A dog comes running into the base. But that's not the crazy thing. The crazy thing is that there's a man in a helicopter trying to shoot the dog.
Yeah, a little confusing at first because it's been a long time since I've seen the movie.
I was thinking it had been at least 25 years since I've seen this movie.
Probably closer to me too.
And as I was watching it, I was kind of wondering, why the fuck has it been so long since I've seen this
Same
movie?
Same here.
You know, going into this, I was like, I remember really liking this movie and I really doubt it's going to hold up. And going into it, yeah, it does. Anyway, so he's shooting at this dog. They're not sure why. He hits one of them and almost hits another. So they wind up just shooting this guy. Yeah, they couldn't understand him because he's speaking Norwegian. They just gun him down. Strange things start happening, though.
Well, they didn't gun him down. He blew himself up.
Well, they, like, blow up their own helicopter
Yeah.
with one of their guys, and then their captain shoots him in the head.
Oh, yeah, one guy gets shot down, yeah.
Yeah,
Okay.
I mean, he's got the gun. He's just about to get the dog. He's taking his aim, and their captain, their CO there, shoots him from the
Right.
side. The first time there was any sort of shooting on the base, says that they're implying.
I just wanted to set the stage for the grenade incident, because I will be getting back to that.
Okay. So, this dog, they take in this dog, but they're kind of wondering why the fuck would somebody be shooting a dog? Maybe he'd gone stir crazy. They're going through every possibility if he was on drugs, if he was drunk, if he had just gone, stir crazy. But then they realize, well, he wasn't there that long. He didn't have any toxins in his blood. He was just trying to kill this dog.
Yeah.
So that leads them off to their base, which they find is a complete clusterfuck. There's all sorts of holes blown into it and blown out of it,
It was
and
pretty much blown up and incinerated.
fires and weapons and these very bizarre corpses that they start putting two and two together, and it's not painfully long, I feel, that they do their deductions
Not at
and
all. They get to it could be any one of us within like 15 minutes in the first movie.
And so they figure this out, and the creature they find could simulate any of them, and can we actually say hilarity ensues there at this point?
The dog was actually an alien shapeshifter who could take the appearance of anyone. It could basically mimic anything organic.
Right. The dog was the alien, and the captain, by preventing him from getting shot, wound up pretty much dooming.
Everyone there.
Yeah, maybe.
And of course, one by one they all die. Could be any one of them. Hilarity ensues.
Yes.
But before all that,
Before all that, we go back to the beginning where this dog came from. And it's pretty much your typical asshole scientist movie. They find this great discovery. They want to keep it under wraps. They call in.
Paleontologist, oddly enough.
Yeah, well, they thought it was a dinosaur. That's all he thought it was. It was
Did
some
they?
sort of
Okay.
prehistoric creature. I mean, because, you wouldn't think alien.
No, because they found the ship first.
That's true. They did. They found the ship first. So then why call a paleontologist? Oh,
Wherever.
because it had been there for thousands of
Well, yeah, it
years.
had been in the ice, and so I guess that makes sense, but I would also bring in a biologist. There are actually xenobiologists, is a thing. So I would think you'd bring in one of them.
Yeah, but you know how much one of those probably has to cost?
True, true.
So of course they keep it under wraps, and then they find out. I think they make this deduction way too quickly for the data they have. I mean, I know they had to speed the plot along,
It drags. We'll get to
but
that anyway.
they had to speed this plot along, but she really like looks into a microscope and just like it's replicating. And I'm sitting here thinking, how the fuck would they have thought of that?
Kind of borrowed from evolution, actually, if you remember
Yeah.
that one.
Yeah, so they are going through the same thing here where they have to figure out who it is. They have a little bit a better of a rule about the organic material, which they did not have in the original.
Retconning.
They did not come up with the
Which definitively answers the ending of the first movie.
What's that?
The retconning about the organic material definitively answers the end of the first movie. We'll get to that
Okay.
in the fan theory section.
And hilarity ensues.
Again, it could be any one of them, they all die.
Yeah.
Or there is a survivor, which kind of really messes with the original movie.
Yeah.
You're
Well,
left
just
to assume, I mean, obviously the guys in the helicopter survived the initial incident. They die shortly into the first movie. But the paleontologist gets away and presumably makes it to this Russian base and survives.
Maybe.
Presumably. We have no reason to think otherwise.
I don't know. Did she have enough fuel for it?
He said, well, granted, he was one of them, but he, Uncle Owen, Joel Edgerton played Uncle Owen in the prequels, is in this movie. He was one of them. He said, you know, we have enough fuel to get to the Russian base. We can assume that she did because we didn't find out otherwise. You know, there's no reason to think that she didn't make it.
Okay, that explains why one of the trucks would not be there when they came back to the scene in the original.
Right. She torched one with him inside of it and she took the other.
Right. And there'd be wreckage left behind when they went
Right.
back to that scene.
True. Yeah, there's a whole lot of retconning that doesn't quite jive with the first movie. Now, what you didn't mention was the very first scene. We see a spaceship coming towards Earth and then kind of going out of control and crashing. Or at least dive bombing towards Earth. We don't see the actual crash. I gotta say, I miss the blue glow of 80s spaceships. Didn't realize how much I missed that until I saw it. And that blue glow around the Earth, which is kind of a simulation of something that actually happens, but is not nearly as pronounced as you see in 80s science fiction.
We'd been doing some of the old Star Trek movies over the break. Yeah, lots of fun 80s sci-fi or special effects.
Hence, you know exactly what I mean by the blue glow.
Of course.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Because I'd forgotten all about that till I saw the ship in this movie. Also, did they seem to have an inordinate amount of booze for a remote Antarctic base?
I would say they had the exact amount of booze for an Antarctic base. Are
Well,
you kidding me?
they had as much as you would like in that situation,
Yes.
but it's kind of remote. I would think that would be on kind of short supply.
I would think you'd stock up.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, maybe they do send, you know, extra to the more remote places.
Like if you're there was talking about staying there for 6 weeks
That's true.
without any, communication. I mean, they had a nice little game room and stuff set up, but I mean, you gotta drink in that
Oh, of
situation.
course. And there's a
There's no
scene
way.
where Russell's character, MacReady, gets pissed off at a chess computer and pours his drink into it. And I couldn't th help think that that was a terrible waste because there's probably not much around, but.
Well, right. I just couldn't see him doing that. Not when that's his only thing, out there.
Well, it's one of your few sources of entertainment, and you know, booze has got to be a commodity, so it seemed pointless. Now, on to the grenade gag, as I call it. Lars and Natias, whose names we learn in the second movie, land at McMurdy to kill the dog. One of them pulls out a grenade, goes to throw it. It slips out of his hand and ends up behind him. Seemed awfully comedic for the tone of the movie so far. This cheap sight gag in the middle of nowhere in a very dramatic movie, probably Carpenter's most dramatic movie, or at least one of them.
Well, and it starts it off. I mean,
Yeah.
that's the first thing we see. That's the first bit of business. It's kind of confusing a little in a way.
It just really didn't fit.
It sets the tone of chaos.
Well, that's
And
true.
that's really what this entire movie is. Both of them are.
Yeah,
It's
true.
just the descent into chaos. If you notice, I think in both movies, people kill people more than the
Probably, yeah. And if it had gone down any other way, I think it would have made a lot more sense if it was a more serious moment. But a slippery grenade just seemed way too comedic.
Oh, it's a banana in the tailpipe.
It just didn't fit the movie, because this
So,
really is the most serious Carpenter movie we've reviewed.
very true.
Although I will say that Russell Stock character fit better in this one than anything else I've seen him in. Because he's always the same guy. He's always Snake Plissken. But Snake worked in this movie. Even more than, I think, Escape from New York. And in the beginning, they did a great job of misdirecting attention away from the dog.
Well,
You forget that they were chasing the dog, and it's just this dog wandering around the base, and you're not suspicious of it until.
which one, the first one or the
In
second
the
one?
first one. I'm just talking about the Carpenter version.
Okay, the Carpenter one. No, I think they made the dog, as creepy as hell.
Really? He didn't seem creepy to me until they bring him in with the other dogs.
There's a lot of scenes where he's just walking around kind of stone, without making a sound. Just very strange for a dog, the way he was behaving.
Okay, I don't have a lot of experience with dogs, and maybe I didn't notice that, but for me, it really did take suspicion away until the scene where they brought him in with the other dogs, which was brilliantly shot,
Oh, yeah.
because that was probably the most tense scene in the movie, and it's just a bunch of dogs. He was incredibly creepy in that scene.
Yes. Yes, the way he just walks into the middle of that, that pound,
Yeah.
that kennel.
And you don't know what's gonna happen, because I mean I knew what was gonna happen, but it's been long enough that I didn't remember the cue. So it just really builds the tension for that moment when it turns and you finally see the creature.
But then again, maybe it's because I watched the prequel first.
Oh, okay. I watched them in real life chronological order.
Honestly, it was a lot of fun watching the prequel first and then going into the second one.
That may have been better. We'll get to why and when we get to the prequel.
Yeah.
I will say I liked a lot of the creature design. A lot of it was fairly cheesy, but when it hit beautifully. The two-faced creature was awesome.
Yeah.
And it was nice to see how that happened in the prequel.
It was awesome that they would take designs from the original in the prequel.
Well, they had to explain how this two-headed alien happened, or two-headed corpse that had, bizarre parts to it.
And that's the thing. I'd totally forgotten the scene where they go to the Norwegian base. Just
Okay.
complete, I mean, it had been so many
Yeah,
years
yeah, yeah.
since I'd seen the
I'd forgotten
movie.
a lot of it, so
I'd
yeah.
completely forgotten about it. So when I was watching the prequel, I thought, oh, what the fuck? Because all I remember really from the original is that it was taking the shape of people, the shape of people and going after, and I don't remember much about, effects wise from
Same
it.
here, that's really all I remember too, the basic plot.
Right. So when I'm watching the prequel and I'm seeing all these aliens, I'm like, what the fuck did they do with this? Kind of like, where did all this come from? And then once it gets into the other one, it all came right from here. Jesus.
Yeah, the prequel was a lot of fan service.
Well, I think the scene where they go into that Norwegian base deserved to be explained.
Oh, absolutely. That's one of the few things I liked about the prequel. Back to Carpenters. They referenced thermite in 82. I didn't hear anything about thermite until the late 90s, early thousands, in
In the
most
prequel,
media.
they talk about somebody using a titanium,
I didn't know
implant.
thermite existed in 82.
Would they really use titanium for an implant in 82 also? I mean, I just thought that would be beyond medical
Well, that was in
science.
the prequel, right?
Yes.
Retconning. But in Carpenters, they mentioned thermite, the one that was actually made in 82. I was very impressed with that. Also, the alien ship, the wide shots, it was clearly a matte painting, but it looked amazing. Loved that design. And the cell animation, the cell assimilation animation, the computer simulation,
Oh, yeah.
that was brilliant because it very concisely explained what the creature does.
Yeah, then seeing that after seeing the first one, I was kind of like, man, it just did the same thing hers did, only his had better, less, didn't have as good graphics.
But it gave you all the exposition you needed very quickly
Yeah.
and very concisely. And it was weird seeing a young Wilford Brimley. Relatively young. He was maybe in his 40s.
I had seen him young before, and I can't remember which movie I had seen him in, but yeah, oh, I really almost didn't recognize him. I think the weird thing is it's only like, what, 4 years before Cocoon? No, six.
Yeah, I was thinking about that.
No, four, because the Cocoon re the Return was 88.
Okay, I knew they were 80s. And he looked a lot older in that one.
Wait a minute. No, Cocoon, the original, was 85.
So it's like
Only
3 years.
3 years
How did he age so
between.
much in 3 years?
I don't know.
Maybe it was just a mustache.
Yeah, I think it's just the mustache and the color of it, and
Maybe he
I
went
don't
a little
know.
gray.
Yeah.
But I think the Carpenter film worked much better as a science fiction movie than as a horror movie. I didn't really jump much. There weren't many scares.
Right.
The only real scare for me was when Palmer's blood was tested with the wire.
Yeah, that was a nice suspenseful scene, and I think the shocking thing about that scene was how few of them were actually infected.
Yeah, only the one.
Right, exactly. Because I really just expected a shit ton of aliens, and they were just going to get into it there, even though I'd seen this before. But
Yeah,
you kind of
too
remember
long.
them getting into it,
Yeah.
and it's like, oh, no, he wasn't. Like, what? Really?
And they did a great job overall of building the suspense. The storm was a great ticking clock. And just when I start to think that they're too willing to believe MacReady is human, they throw suspicion on him.
Yeah.
One of the other guys finds his coat that had been ripped up, which was a mark of the alien. It rips your clothes when it comes out. Although they said in reference to taking blood that it's just tissue. Blood isn't tissue.
No.
You gotta nitpick the science a little bit. It is science fiction.
Did the doctor say that, though? I didn't catch that.
I think it was MacReady or somebody else. It wasn't the doctor.
Okay.
It was just one little nitpick. I loved the bit with the cells. That I have no complaints about. The whole theory about how the thing works, I have no complaints about that. Just the line about blood being tissue, I have to nitpick. Also, did you happen to notice, and I know you've only seen the movie twice, but a couple of music cues very reminiscent of Upstream Color.
Yes.
I think you took a lot of influence from this.
I definitely, very much so. That low bass.
Yeah, it was a low bass synth that warbled a little bit. That sounded exactly like something in Upstream Color. I can't, remember exactly, but he did something very similar.
I mean, the two flaws that this movie has, in my opinion, both of them have, that
Okay.
they both share the same exact flaws, I think.
Okay.
You have the speed in which they're able to figure out what this thing does. How would one come to that conclusion so quickly? I mean, I know, again, it's in the interest of time for both of them, or else this would be a 3-hour, movie.
I think that's a valid criticism of Carpenter's, and I think it's in the interest of suspense. I don't think the other one suffers from the same problem. I think it suffers from the opposite problem, because they took half the movie to get to it could be any one of us.
Yeah.
I think that dragged. One more quick note about Carpenter's. Loved that they left the ending open.
Why do I remember in the original, or when I first saw it the first time, I remember a different ending.
Really?
I do.
I don't remember an ending at all. When Matt pointed out the fan theories, I had no clue what he was talking about.
I remember the dog running in the snow again. Think of that.
Oh, at the end?
Yes.
That's interesting.
Like, it goes to black with them there, together. And the next thing, like, it in like while the credits are showing, it cuts to a quick shot of the dog going off into the snow,
I did
off
not
into the
remember that.
wilderness. I swear, because that blew me away that a movie would say, imply that the world is going to be fucking decimated by aliens, and was just kind of like, wow. But it did. They did not do that this time. I was kind of like, huh.
Now, on to the fan theories.
Okay.
It leaves it open as to whether Child's Keith David's character is alien or human. That's basically the ending. You don't know if he's the thing or if he's human. And there are a couple of theories that try to answer this question. MacReady gives him some alcohol, and a lot of the theories suggest that it's actually a Molotov. I see no evidence of that. There's no tip off that it's anything other than a bottle of booze, which, as we've pointed out, there's plenty of on the base.
Right.
And the fact that he drinks it and doesn't respond suggests that he's the alien, because he wouldn't know what it's supposed to taste like.
It doesn't make any sense for him to be an alien in the end, because I think even MacReady says this, that if you're an alien, you would just do it now. There's no point.
Couple of other theories that suggest that MacReady knows he's an alien. His earring is gone. The thing is because the thing couldn't replicate it. Not true, because his earring is very, very clear. That's how they answered it with the retconning. Also, MacReady doesn't see his breath as he talks. Do you see anybody's breath in the movie when they talk? Even outdoors? No.
Okay, that would be my third pet peeve with the movie, was that
Well,
they were
yeah.
obviously not in the cold.
MacReady runs out with like a t-shirt and a vest at points, I think.
Right.
And in the second movie, she goes out with a vest and a thermal shirt in Antarctica to wave down a helicopter. She would have ended up with hypothermia in like 10 seconds if she'd
Yeah.
gone out like that in actual Antarctica. Also, one more theory. Child is wearing a different coat, apparently. And the coat that was hanging on the wall by the exit when we last saw Childs alive is gone. You have to have seen it a bunch of times to catch something like that, I'm sure.
Yeah.
However, the prequel does definitively answer it because they establish that the thing can't replicate inorganic matter. And he is clearly wearing his earring when he takes a sip of booze.
Yeah.
Turns his head, you clearly see his ear with the earring in it. He's human. According to the retconning in the 2011 version. Oh, by the way, in reference to how many adaptations there have been, it's based on John M. Campbell Jr.'s novella, Who Goes There? Which
Which, why did they keep that title?
was more loosely adapted by Howard Hawks and Charles Nibbe as 1951's The Thing from Another World. So The Thing was only the second film adaptation, and it got the title from The Thing from Another World, apparently.
The Thing is a terrible title for a movie. That could be the fourth pet peeve.
And apparently, the Carpenter version is a much more faithful adaptation.
Okay.
Not surprising. All right, on to the 2011 version, also called The Thing. Okay, I'm just going to get to my main criticism. Again, having watched the Carpenter version first, it's the same story and the same information and the same exposition
Right.
all over again.
Yeah.
A lot. And they take half of the movie to get to It Could Be Any One of Us. And there's another storm and another dog. Okay, the dog's kind of necessary because it has
Yes.
to run out at the end. So, okay, that's not a fair criticism. But there's another storm creating a ticking clock.
Could even be the same storm, actually.
Possibly. I think the storm in the Carpenter version started after the start of the movie.
Sure.
Because they're outside when the dog gets there. So it's probably not the same storm. They just decided to set up the same device to set up another ticking clock unnecessarily. It was just too much fan service. It's better produced than the Carpenter version, of course. It's got a lot more money thrown at it.
Yeah.
Doesn't have the tension or the claustrophobia of the Carpenter version, though.
Yeah, it goes for a little bit of a different approach. It goes for the more the whole mad scientist bend to it,
Which
which
they didn't really play either. I thought that was going to be a thing. He was clearly set up as the asshole psychopath who would do anything in the name of science.
yeah.
But they didn't really play that.
Yeah, it became irrelevant what he was in the end, because this creature was just going to do whatever he was going to do.
And they just felt the need to repeat the same exposition. And I get that it was done so that you didn't have to see the Carpenter version to understand it. But, having watched them both in the same day, it just got a little old. We don't really need another explanation of why how the thing imitates cells.
Yeah, I think it might have been I might have liked it better if they didn't quite understand what the hell was going on, you know?
Possibly, yeah.
Although how if this doctor could figure it out on the American base, how could these scientists not have figured it out?
Well, they didn't have a medical doctor, did they?
Not really.
She was a paleontologist.
Yeah. Which just seemed like such a jump, you know? Like I'm looking at the cells.
Yeah.
Oh, they're replicating.
In that sense, it was, yes. But again, it took half of the movie to get to It Could Be Any One of Us. When
Well,
Carpenter
yeah,
pulled that off in like 15 minutes.
because first the thing had to jump out. It had to become free after, for them to interact with it even. And honestly, once that thing jumped out of that ice box, I mean, who wouldn't just be like, okay, all bets are off. This thing has to be fucking destroyed.
Oh, yeah.
I And I love that they were ordered into radio silence, which is why the American base never,
Nice
on the other
explanation.
side, never heard about what was going on. And I just really love the way they set up the Carpenter movie.
But they had to do that. And it was a lot of the same ground that they covered unnecessarily, the blood tests. Maybe try something more creative. Something we haven't just seen. Or haven't already seen.
I'm talking about how you go through that scene when they're going back to in Carpenter's, when they're going to the Norwegian base, and how everything is
Oh,
explained
yeah.
that
That
they
was
see in
nice.
that movie. Every explosion, every blast, the axe in the wall, everything.
I probably didn't really catch it because I watched them in the other order. I might have to go through now that I've seen the prequel and look at that scene again to see exactly how well that was done.
Honestly, it felt like watching one long movie. Like they were both the same. It was, the beginning and the ending of a movie rather than a sequel and a prequel. Because I mean, it flowed that well. Now, the only thing where it did not flow well was the spaceship. Because when you go back into Carpenter's version, the spaceship is, suddenly above ground, and there were no vehicles around it.
True, it's they only had to cut down maybe 10 feet to get to it in the Carpenter version.
Yeah, it was kind of out, they were
Well,
kind of like
it was uncovered.
exposed.
It was exposed, but you could tell that they had cut down a ways to get to it.
True. As they, in the last scene in the prequel, it was kind of underground still.
And they do say that they cut down. I think they use thermite to get to it, but it
Yeah.
doesn't look nearly as deep as it does in the prequel, which is an odd mistake because they spend a lot of time trying to retcon and explain and connect to the first movie.
Yeah.
That was an odd mistake. They should have brought it up closer to the ground before it got disabled.
Yeah.
But okay, so watching them in the other order, did you get tired of all of the explanations and all of the repetition in the Carpenter version?
No, not really.
Okay.
Because
Interesting.
I mean, it was they were making repeating the same mistakes, obviously, because and it made the whole scene with actually the scene with Kurt Russell recording the tape to try to leave a message that much more powerful.
True. I can see that.
Because and I mean, it's not even a prequel thing. It's just he knew that he saw what happened at that base and deducted what happened, and there was no, instruction left behind. So he wanted to, but actually seeing it for ourselves in the prequel, yeah, it became that much more like, oh yeah, you hope somebody finds that tape.
So I think we've determined that you need to watch the prequel first to really appreciate it.
Definitely.
Because if you watch it second, like I did, it's just a lot of the same and not done as well.
I did like the acting. I'd say the prequel was better acted than
This
the
is true.
original.
I think my only real criticisms of the Carpenter version is obviously some of the effects weren't great and some of the acting was dodgy. On the whole, it was serviceable, the acting in the Carpenter version.
Yeah.
It did the job. Which is unfortunate because Keith David is in it and he's a brilliant actor.
Yeah.
But even he was kind of serviceable
Although
in
I
the
always want
Carpenter
to.
version.
Everything I see him in, I just want him to talk about not touching another man's fries. Why haven't we done that movie
We should need to.
yet?
But yes, the acting was better in the 2011 version. It was obviously better produced. But it was just too samey for me. And okay, why did they have to redesign the creature? They updated the creature.
Well,
Made it look cooler, which is fine, except it's the same thing that then gets unleashed at this other base and doesn't look nearly as cool.
from what I'm gathering, the creature was learning still how to replicate. That, like, when it was on the Norwegian base, it still didn't quite get it. it was still just starting out, trying to figure out how to replicate well and kind of fucking it up here and there.
Okay. But when we see it in its pure form, effectively, we know you have the insect legs and all that. They looked much more realistic and much more insectoid than they did in the Carpenter version.
The Carpenter version, you don't really see it all that well. Well, what you do see is something that's been frozen and kind of, left out.
It was frozen before the prequel. They're the ones who
Well,
thawed it out. It just went straight from one base to the other.
that's true. It was in the block of ice, but it was.
There's maybe a few hours between the two movies.
It was left out after being burnt. In the Carpenter version, we're seeing something that was burnt.
Possibly, yeah. But they also explained that each part of it is independent. So the part that got the dog, that replicated the dog, probably might not have been burnt, hence it was able to get away.
Yeah.
It stands to reason that that part avoided getting burned, hence it survived.
Yeah.
So that explanation doesn't work either. They just wanted to have fun and, amp up the effects when, they really should have just been trying to copy the original but better, without the cheesiness. Just a nitpick, but yeah, I was watching the prequel and, the thing looked a lot more realistic than it did in the movie I just watched, and there's, a few hours between them.
I mean, I think I see what you're talking about with the dog when it reveals itself as the dog, from there it's still kind of trying to figure out the whole replication
Well, yeah.
thing.
But I'm more thinking of the scene later in the Carpenter version when you've got the upside down head and the six legs.
Oh yeah.
Those legs do not look nearly as realistic as the insect legs in the prequel do.
It was weird that it would have done that. Like it would just take on, suddenly I'm a spider now.
Well, yeah, I can't criticize that. That's just Rick Baker having a little fun with the design. I think it was Rick Baker who did the effects for this. Or the creature effects. Whoever it was, they were just having some fun with the design.
I guess you have to figure, I'm just a head. What can I do?
Yeah.
I need legs or something to move.
Yeah. And I just figured that was the original form of the creature. It was kind of this insectoid thing.
But that's the thing, the creature has no original form.
Well, it has to have some kind of natural state.
I don't think so, honestly. I think it just changed.
What is it born looking like then?
Like you never see the same configuration twice. Like even with the even in Carpenter's version, all those corpses, they all were different. And that's what the prequel, took that. They took the, to make those corpses the living version of them.
Right.
And of course you have the original, primordial, creature.
The one on the ship.
Yeah.
Which, again, and that's a little bit of a plot hole. It's got a human face. If that thing had lived on the ship all this time, why would it have a human face?
Did it have a human face?
There was a human face in there, a very human-looking face. If it was the same creature that had escaped and had, assimilated all of this DNA, that would make sense. But I'm assuming if it was on the ship, it was on the ship from the crash. And there was definitely a human-looking face there.
I couldn't really see through the ice, and then it was moving around so quickly after that.
No, when she comes face to face with it,
Oh,
she falls down onto the ship.
I thought it had taken someone's face by then.
But she was the only one there.
When she was confronting it?
Yeah, the other guy, Joel Edgerton's character, didn't get there till later.
I'd assume that was from they had chased that from the base.
I think that's how I explained it at the time, but why would it be down that far? Maybe, I don't know. Minor nitpicking,
Both movies were implying that the creature was planning on either getting off the planet altogether or trying to make a ship, to further invade the planet. They never explain what the creature's intention actually is. I mean, we're only left to assume that it's to invade.
Well, we're left to assume that we can't risk having this thing get out
Very true.
because, there were calculations in the Carpenter version as to how quickly it would take over all of Earth.
Because it was 1982 and computers just performed magical.
Oh.
It was the typical 1982, I have a computer, I can just ask it a question.
Yeah.
It
Can't
says
fault it for that.
and it gives you the exact statistics of how fast it would take over the planet using no data whatsoever for something like that.
Well, possibly using pandemic models. That's all
Maybe
it
a
really would have to go.
pandemic model. Okay.
That's all it would have to go on, obviously. There's been no, there's no analog to an alien in, shapeshifter invasion.
Exactly. 72%.
Possibly using how many people had died on the base at that point and how quickly. And just extrapolating from there. I mean I can make sense of that scene. It doesn't bother me. I can see how that
I
could
just kind of
go.
laugh because it's, that's the
But
time
yes, you're
period.
right. It is an 80s computers can do everything scene.
Yes. You just ask it, hey, what'll happen if this alien comes and takes over gets into the population? Well, it will take over the world in 27,000 hours.
Nothing compares to Tron in that sense, though.
Yeah.
There is no egregious case, no case of, computer solve everything 80s thinking more egregious than Tron.
I don't know. Star Trek: The Voyage Home is free.
It's been too long since I've seen that one.
New love for that movie after seeing it again.
That the one where they go back in time?
Yes, it is.
Okay. It was always one of my favorites.
Yeah. Computer on.
Mm-hmm.
Talking into the mouse.
Yeah, and but with regard to the Star Trek computers, that's 23rd century stuff.
Oh boy. All
Anyway, I'm pretty much done with my notes on both of them.
right. Let's see. You like the beardy guy in the prequel he had.
Lars?
I think that's what it was, Lars.
The
Oh
guy who
yeah,
speak English?
the guy with the giant beard. Yeah, his facial expressions were just fucking fantastic.
Yeah. Kind of
Just
reminded me a bit of Lenny, though.
Lenny.
Mice and Men.
Oh. But just, I mean, everything, just the look of surprise
Oh, yeah.
to him,
Good
just
actor,
everything
yeah.
he had, fantastic. A Brit with perfect teeth, no offense, but of course that can't be real.
Did he look familiar to you? Because he looked very familiar to me and I couldn't
He did
place him.
look familiar.
I couldn't find him on IMDb.
But how is he not an alien? A Brit with perfect teeth? Come on.
Good
There's a stereotype for a reason. I'm sorry, people in the UK.
point. And we do have some listeners there.
I'm sure we do, but come on. And oh yeah, the aliens don't have stop, drop, and roll on their planet. Oh, you know what? That leads us to the number one pet peeve that I had
Oh,
saved.
we forgot about the flamethrowers, didn't we?
The number one pet peeve for both movies, and I love how they stayed consistent in the prequel with it in a way. I think that's kind of funny that they said, okay. Because I was thinking when I was watching the prequel, why the fuck doesn't anything burn? They're fucking flamethrowers indoors. And then when you get to the Carpenter version, and he does the same fucking thing.
The room with the dogs, the kennel.
Yeah.
Wooden walls. Wooden
Yes.
supports.
Yes.
Nothing burns except
Just
the thing.
fucking throw a flamethrower in there. Throw dynamite around.
Except for that one bookshelf. That went up like a house on fire, to use the expression, and went out just as quickly.
And come on, you operate the flame and the dynamite so close to each other. Come on.
Yeah. It wasn't the flamethrower in that case, it was a flare, right?
Claire, but still, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, a spark's gonna jump from one to the other, and yeah, you're gonna get blown up.
This the movie ends with a Wile E. Coyote death, and they all blew. He just blew them all up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, on to sequels and remakes.
Wow, is that kind of pointless? Well,
Well,
no,
we have the prequel.
because obviously, I wouldn't even mind seeing a third.
After the Carpenter?
Yes.
I was thinking the same thing. Incidentally, the Carpenter version subsequently spawned a novelization in 82, a comic book miniseries adaptation entitled The Thing from Another World, and published by Dark Horse Comics in 91, a video game sequel, also titled The Thing, in 2002, and a prequel film, of course, that we've also talked about. I would also like to see a sequel. Particularly since they have established that child was not an alien.
Well, I think they could leave that question up. I mean, they could have. See, what I was thinking was they have the paleontologist Kate from the first from the prequel
Right.
in her vehicle driving off,
To the Russian base, follow her after the end of the first one, right.
sees the explosions and shit,
Mm-hmm.
and comes over and picks up MacReady and
Nice.
Childs.
Nice.
Only problem is we don't have a time machine to have all the same cast. You would have to
Oh, of
recast.
course. That's not a big deal. I mean, Russell and Keith David are such iconic actors that I think recasting would be okay because you know you're never gonna get anyone like them again.
Yeah.
You know, it wouldn't be a problem. I have no idea who I would cast.
And then, of course, they could do a fourth one in space.
Actually, I thought of one if he can do an American accent,
Oh.
because I want to see him in another movie. John Boyega from Attack the Block, Moses, as Keith
Okay.
David.
Okay, I could see that. If he could do an
Yeah, if
American
he can do an
accent.
American accent. What about MacReady? Who could pull off that look?
I don't know, man. You know, and I guess I didn't really talk about Kurt Russell's performance in this. It's kind of Pliskin-ish, but it's kind of,
It's more just angry and jaded, which
yeah,
is everything he does.
he's just so chill throughout the entire thing. Even when he's talking about pretty much everybody's certain death, he, you know, as we did in the intro line of this, it's just, you know, we're all fucked, but so is he, kind of.
I have who can play MacReady.
You could almost do another prequel to this, actually, and do a young MacReady to see, like, what the fuck has he been through that he's just so even keeled in this situation.
Yeah. Although she was kind of even keeled, not even keeled, but she really didn't fall apart when people started dying either. And she's a paleontologist. She's probably not been around people dying a lot.
Yeah, but you could. She was stressed out from it. She was kind of like, what the fuck,
Well,
you know?
true.
We've got to do this to survive. You know,
Right.
she's determined, where he was just, fuck it.
I get the impression MacReady is military and has probably seen a lot of shit.
Exactly. I mean, it wouldn't even be a sci-fi movie. It would just be MacReady off on some, you know, war or whatever.
He might be a little old, but I have MacReady in the sequel that she picks up. Joshua Jackson.
Joshua Jackson.
Fringe.
Oh, yeah.
He
Oh,
could pull off that attitude.
that's an excellent choice.
I mean, he's a little older than Russell was when he did the thing, I suspect, but he can play younger.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of how old MacReady was supposed to be.
I think probably around 30-ish.
Like if he, you know, would have been in Vietnam,
Oh, okay.
which
They never really implied Nam.
Right. If you wanted to do a prequel, MacReady in Vietnam.
But it's possible.
Yeah.
He looked like he was maybe around 30.
Right. So you'd been, you know,
Yeah, could have
kind of
happened.
in living age back then.
Yeah. All right, on to Brains.
On to Brains.
Now, starting with the 82. held up a lot better than every Carpenter movie we revisited. And I loved it. I'm going 4.5.
Yeah, I'm up there with you. I mean, I don't know if I'd give it They Live status, but it is definitely a fucking great movie to see. And I'd watch it again. I'd watch both of these again in a heartbeat. I'm going 5 with it.
Okay.
Yeah.
And on to The Thing, the 2011 version.
Yeah.
I think the key is watching it first, because for me it was just a lot of the same and it got very boring. And yes, it was pretty and it was the acting was good and there were some tense moments. It was okay, but I really can't go higher than a 3.5.
I was bouncing around 3.5 or 4 after I finished watching it. And then I saw the Carpenter version and was just, this could be one of the best prequels ever made.
Okay.
Well, if you think about it, most prequels kind of are just, they don't really live up
That's true, that's true.
to the originals.
Yeah.
But just seeing that scene where they, you felt like you had just finished watching one movie and you just start the other, and they literally just run right into each other like that, picking up from one scene to the next. I don't know if that's been done before.
Yeah, true. The transition was very nice, and
Oh, it was very nice. And I was so glad that I watched it in the order I did.
although
And
I'm
there
not
was
sure how I feel about it being in the prequel, how I feel about it being in the credits.
Well, that's why I thought they were going to do, the whole thing with the dog in the Carpenter version, because I could have remembered, could have sworn I remembered just seeing the dog running off into the distance, kind of as a throwaway thing in the credits, and was kind of surprised to not see it this time around. So I don't know if I'm just remembering things wrong or if something was edited out.
That's a good
But
question.
yeah, I'm definitely going 4 for the prequel.
Okay, and what have we learned?
We learned that we need to start doing warmer movies in the winter.
Yeah. Well, next week's is set in LA, so it'll be warmer.
All right, good.
And I learned that you really need to watch the prequel before the Carpenter's version, if the Carpenter version, if you want to appreciate them.
I think the answer is always to watch the prequel first, even if it wasn't the,
Star Wars? Even with Star Wars.
I think so.
Wow.
I mean,
Send your hate mail to zombietank@gmail.com.
but it's if you're talking about someone who's never seen the movies before.
Fair enough, fair enough. Well, no, still I would go with New Hope first, but that's another debate for another time.
Well, it's the setup,
New Hope is the setup. That was intended to be first.
Why go to your best A material first?
That's a fair argument. Anyway, until next week when we will be reviewing John Dies at the End. Little nervous about this one. I always say that when I'm talking about this movie.
I was gonna say, you've seen this before, right?
It's a joke. John
Oh.
dies at the end.
Oh. A little nervous for John,
Ba-dum-bum.
huh?
Go to zombietakeout.com, check out the album art, the episode description, of course, the episode itself, which you're already listening to. Links to find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Google Plus. Links to subscribe via RSS and iTunes. Please leave us a rating and a review on iTunes. We'd really appreciate it. Also, thank you to Zombie2099 for the very nice review on iTunes.
Oh.
You'll also find the movie list, every movie we've reviewed so far, and every movie we're going to review, up through the next, by the time you hear this, three movies. I just found something on Netflix that we've been wanting to review for quite some time.
Oh, you want to talk about sending hate mail?
Yeah, that'll be fun. You'll also find the request form. If you've got a movie you'd like to hear us review, please leave it on the request form. We'll get to it. And the recommendations list. The 2011 version came within half a brain, which I think is
Yeah.
fair. You can also email us, zombietakeout@gmail.com, once again. And of course, leave us a voicemail at 414-368-ZTL1, or for the alphanumerically challenged.
You can go fuck yourself.
414-368-9861. Of course, always remember that you'll always be calling from the middle of Milwaukee. And until next week, always remember, never forget, wherever you go in life, there you
There
are.
You are.
I'm tired of talking, Fix. I just want to get up to my shack and get drunk.
Did the job, which is unfortunate because David Keith is in, or Brian Keith is, Keith David, David is in it, and
David, we love this guy, but we can't fucking get his name right.